What's up, long players? Welcome to the Long Play Listening Party, the show where we go deep on local music, writing, recording, inspiration, gear, whatever else sounds good to us. I'm Howie Howard from Mr. Furious Records. Whole crew is here, starting with Nate Holt, aka Australians. What's up, Nate?
What's up, everyone?
Royce Diamond, how you doing?
I am doing excellent.
And welcome back, Daniel Lovecraft.
What's up, man?
We are talking about your new record, Hauntological Phalluses 1984, and specifically the synthesizer you used to make this record, the Roland JX3P. What is a Roland JX3P, Daniel?
It is a six-voice polyphonic synthesizer released by the Roland Corporation in 1983. It was one of the first, alongside the Jupiter 6, to incorporate MIDI technology developed by Dave Smith with the Roland Corp. And it's kind of like a little brother to the Junos, like the Juno 106, which came out a year later. It's a little bit different in the voice architecture, but I mean, it's a classic board that was on a lot of records back then, especially in 1983. One of my favorites is Juicy, It Takes Two, a fantastic record. I think you'll hear it on a lot of boogie albums and stuff. And one of my inspirations, Damon Riddick, also known as Dame Funk, he uses that board ad nauseum. I mean, it's an integral part of his sound, and so I kind of got into it listening to his records and realizing, oh, that's that specific board. And I know a lot of people love the Juno 106. They think it's much better, and it, by a lot of counts, it probably is, in terms of like it's a one giant sweet spot in terms of dialing it in and great patches. The JX is a little bit harder to make sound good in all aspects, but with this particular recording, I did my best to explore it and try and get the most out of it. I made all the sounds, all the drum sounds with it, kind of Giorgio Moroder style. And it's got an onboard sequencer. I can't remember how many steps, but it's a lot. I mean, it's like more than 128, it seemed like, some days. Or maybe that's just the subdivisions I was messing with. But yeah, it's primitive for what it is, but it's just got that classic Roland vibe to it. And I fell in love with it, and I bought its little brother, the MKS-30, which is a rack unit that uses the Juno chipset in it. And I use that along with the JX on this record.
And what gave you the idea to make a whole album really focused and highlighting on this synthesizer?
I had spent a couple months collecting these two particular synths and getting them up running 100%. I had to run to Wichita a whole bunch. I had to send the MKS to Tennessee to get voice chips replaced on it, because that Juno line of voice chips they give out all the time. And so, like, you know, these are nearly 40-year-old boards, so they give out pretty easily. But it all came together really quickly. Like, as soon as I plugged them in, I was like, oh, I'm making tracks. It literally took 3 weeks of just me on my off days sitting down here, and I was obsessed with the sound. They're beautiful, beautiful sounding boards. And so it all came together very quickly, very organically. It's a minimal kind of record for me, but it was so quick and so natural. I didn't set out with the intention of making it that way, but I looked up and I had all these tracks, and I'm like, why not just put it out? You know, it was just a lot of hard work and good timing, I guess.
Did the board influence your writing, or did you know what you wanted to write with this record?
Oh, I came at it with some of the songs were sort of already gestating with me, thematically, you know, the leitmotifs, obviously the theme from Hauntology is a leitmotif that I've had going, and it'll probably I'll probably do more with it, but yeah, the songs kind of, most of the songs, about half the record just kind of fell out of messing around with the boards. They just sort of developed naturally. But I think I came at each track from kind of a different approach. Like, I wrote a song on a little keyboard, brought it into the studio, and just like expanded it with the JX and MKS setup. And other songs I already had sequenced earlier with other devices and just used them kind of as sound modules to explore those songs more and fill them out. But yeah, I mean, like, for the most part, the songs just fell out of the board.
Yeah, and you said that you used some effects pedals.
Yeah.
As well.
A lot of effects pedals. Yeah, I mean, the board already has a chorus built into it.
Yeah.
But it's only one speed, so you only get sort of one width with it. And as you can hear, it's starting now. This one I used about four different chorus pedals and about three different flange pedals altogether on a single sequence.
Yeah.
And it sounds massive and detuned, and I was into it, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was curious as to some of the effects I was hearing, and just was going to ask how extensive the pedal use was, so it's going to
pretty
be
extensive.
So
I mean, like, it, I think most of them at least got ran through, you know, Howie's Falcon Drive for a little saturation, and I just wanted to put as much chorus, you know, I'm trying to go for purple music here, so lots of chorus, lots of modulation, flange, phaser, that's where it's at.
So, and everything sequenced on the keyboard?
It depended on the song. Like, I have an external unit that I use for the majority of my sequencing, but the board does have its own sequencer, and it's polyphonic. So, I mean, I could do really entire compositions with the thing.
So, I mean, it's like a full-on workstation.
It's a very primitive workstation. I mean, like, it'll do one sequence. And it's not tempo synced.
Okay.
The MIDI isn't tempo synced, so I had to find workarounds with that. It takes a trigger impulse in. Like, it's supposed to be from an 808 or a 707, but I had to make do. I have a TR-8, and I'd send a click to it, and it would misfire. And so I just had to, like, use the sequence as it was misfiring. And that kind of, like, created some cool variations in the movement of, especially, like, the percussion tracks that I did.
Let's listen to some of that chorus. This is the theme from Hauntology, and then we'll listen to a little bit of the Return to Planet S.
Yeah, that one kind of sets the tone. I think it's a very pretty album, and it's kind of minimal.
Yeah, I like those chord changes a lot.
A bit more classically inspired. Listening to a lot of Beethoven at the time, so I guess that kind of came out a little bit.
Effects pedals you have going on here?
A lot of, on this part in particular right now, I think it's mostly just a Digitech Digi-Delay. I've got two of those, and I set them at different speeds on their analog tape setting, and you can get really big width, and
it sounds
travels
really
around. yeah, most of my pedal rig that I use is Digitech, those old stomp boxes like the X series, because they're kind of the standard. They're the most average effect of that type I can find, yeah, right. Pretty much. They don't, I mean, they obviously color the signal, but they're the typical idea of that. And whenever I want to do something wild and crazy, I'll make a special pedal rig for that.
I love the purple turbo flange from that series because it has an infinite rise and fall. I love that setting.
That gets used on a lot of drums that I have. But that one and the phaser, they're just different formats pretty much. And they work beautifully together. So running clicky drums through that makes this really psychedelic swirl, especially when you pan them, you know, hard right and left. Obviously, the board itself excels at sort of string sounds and brassy sounds. I think they're, you know, Roland are pretty much unparalleled in making that, that really thick, wide string sound.
So did you programmed most of the sounds? Or
yeah.
Did you, like, tweak presets or, like...
Sometimes I'd tweak presets, sometimes I'd start from scratch. This coming up here, that's just the electric piano run through the Falcon Drive, and then, you know, a couple overdubs of that. So I tried to use presets whenever I had it, if they had a good use, but most of the presets suck, to be honest.
Yeah. And so you use the programmer for that, right?
For the chords there?
For to program the sounds on the JVC.
Usually, but I can only do one with each. So sometimes I'd use the programmer on the JX, and most of the time it was on the MKS, and then I match those settings with the slider on the JX. Because there's really no way of programming it on the MKS otherwise.
Yeah, okay.
There's that turbo flange rising and falling setting for you, Howie.
Yes. We should say, for people who might not know, I mean, the JX3P was one of the first synths that didn't have a lot of knobs on it for manually changing the sound and manipulating the sound. One of the first synths that was really based around presets that you could save. Mm-hmm. And it did have the ability, you can edit the sound with the buttons, but it didn't have kind of that hands-on tweakability. It traded some of that for the saving and the presets, but it did... You could add on the PG200 programmer to get back some of those knobs and some of that type of functionality, which, Daniel, I believe you did or do have.
Yeah, here, I can show it to you real quick.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to say, I haven't actually played one or seen one, like, personally, but it doesn't look like it would be very easy to program anything a whole lot on that board.
Well, I mean, I originally bought the JX03, that Roland Boutique unit.
Okay.
And I really liked the sound, so of course I had to get the original thing. But once you kind of intuit the voice architecture of it and know the layout in your own head, referring to the menu system on there, and it's just a slider knob with, you know, you click A and then... You know, the number button.
There's like two sliders on it, one or two sliders on it.
Yeah, there's a brilliance knob, and then there's the programmer data slider.
Okay.
And the brilliance is pretty much just like an EQ boost along the frequency spectrum. And then the slider is like on a DX7, mm-hmm. where you just, you know, type in your number and then up and down, and you get about, you know, 17 units of expression on that. And I was already used to the voice architecture, so, I mean, and I could refer to the map that's printed out on the panel of it. So it becomes pretty easy once you've messed with it for a couple days, I think, compared to, like, menu diving on a Pro 3 or something like that, which is just, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right. I watched Epson Crass YouTube video about the JX3P the other night, and he shows very well, like, it's once you understand how to edit it, the editing, like, editing a patch isn't too bad. You know, what you don't have is, like, real-time expression.
Yeah, which is, like, one of the main appeals of a analog board, you know, is really getting expressive while you're playing. And, you know, that's what the sequencer's for. You know, you just let it run and then make sure you're clicking your buttons, and it's almost like a DJ rig or something. For some of the songs, it felt like, without the programmer. But with the programmer, I mean, it's just a blast.
You said you have that programmer with you?
Yeah,
you're right. Sure.
I'll show you again.
Oh, did you not see it when you held it?
No, I'm sorry. I was looking at the board.
Probably not when, because I wasn't okay. Talking, that's good. But
because, yeah, I wanted to see it again anyway. One.
Yep. But it's a little more complicated than a Juno, because it's two DCOs, and it's
per voice, right? So you've got
per voice. And so it's easier to make a crappy sound on it.
That's called flexibility.
It's got really slow envelopes, so you hear that sort of trickling sound at the end of those high notes. You can introduce, like, a random sample and hold type waveform to it way late in the signal, which I think is, you know, one of the coolest little tricks you could have with the thing, like holding down a note for longer than 2 seconds and the envelope eventually starts, like, morphing. Mm-hmm. That's an ideal patch for me. Movement, expression.
I love sample holding.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Daniel, do you have any other favorite, you know, like with the sample and hold and the long envelope, any other favorite little tricks for programming or, like, quirks that you really enjoy about the JX3P?
Yeah, I was actually going to bring it up on Planet S. There, you can get this amazing sub-bass tone on the top keys whenever you crank the resonance. Turn the cutoff all the way down, and then I forget what the other trick is. I think you have to have it on, like, on a low pulse wave and, like, a high saw wave, I want to say. I don't remember exactly how to make the patch. Obviously, it's more complicated than just, you know, 6 parameters, but you can get the thing to do, like, this inverted sub bass tone and play it at the top keys. And I have the patch saved on the board at Richards right now. But I had no clue it could do that. It's so deep. It's like, because you know the Juno, it has.
So it's like a filter, like a self-resonating filter type of thing, like key tracking.
Yeah. And you crank the key tracking all the way up, of course.
Yeah.
But like with the Junos, they have sub oscillators, so you can't really get that kind of like deep. Bass on there, unfortunately, but this was a cool kind of workaround I found with it, and I don't know, you guys should give it a shot if you ever get a JX3P that works. I'm thinking about trying to figure that out on another board, but I don't know. I think it's just a quirk of the thing that you have to do some exploring to get to.
This just sounds like every movie and moment that I had in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's super 80s.
It's, well, that's kind of in the concept of it, I guess, mm-hmm. the 1984. Mm-hmm. The idea of the album, though, I guess, you know, retroactively, was that this could be something like a lost artifact from that time period. And hauntology, you know, it's pretty popular these days, the whole hauntology craze. But just my take on it.
I went down a little wormhole on it just reading about the album, and that as a genre. But I love the way that you described the old synthesizers and beauty of a remembered future that we never could attain until now. Love that.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a undercurrent of a lot of art and culture these days, like why we are so nostalgic for pre-millennial music, movies, that sort of thing. Of course, that sort of thing comes in waves for every generation, but for us, it's a time before the internet, whenever, you know, there were these archaic technologies that you weren't just immediately hooked up to a matrix of understanding, and somebody's like, oh, I understand this in this context, and I can immediately dismiss it now. It was more like there's this alien world waiting on the other side of that door, and like you have no clue what to even expect whenever that comes around the corner. So I think that's a big reason why synthwave is on the rise, and retro wave, Soviet wave.
So you made the drums on the JX3P, and then
yep.
How did you sequence them?
I just played them.
Just played them.
Okay.
Okay. Simple enough.
And if I screwed up, well, I just snudge that over there.
Yeah.
But I'd try and get like a take that was fully usable, and then like, you know, do a little tweaking here and there.
Yeah,
I don't do quantizing or grid type work. I think I mentioned that last time.
Yep.
Because I don't really know how to, but I mean,
I've been trying a little bit of that though. I kind of rubbed off a little. I've been trying to not be so regimented, which is sometimes difficult because you want to make sure you can,
In your percussions and stuff and your drums.
What's that?
Nate, are you saying you were rigid in your drums?
I think a little bit more than I probably would want to be.
I gotcha.
But that kind of talking to Daniel last time was what kind of made me a little more aware of it, like in the moment. So I try not to I try to like move things off and or let things happen if they don't sound quite right.
It's nice to have some push and pull, and
it's fun.
You can affect, you know, you can change the energy, right? If the snare's a little ahead or behind.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, like most bassists, you know, and most drummers will tell you, being in the pocket is wonderful, but like all the feel comes from playing with the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Playing with expectation, you know, lagging a little bit, speeding up a little bit. That's where all the energy's at. Just my take, though. I'm not a professional musician, so don't take any of this seriously.
No, that's an absolutely correct take.
Hey, man, this album I think it is great. Whether you're professional or not.
I appreciate it. I at least play one on TV.
You should totally play this on TV. You should put a GoPro up so we could just watch you make this record. We'd watch like 100 hours of you making this record.
At least. That's my real masterwork. Watching me pick my nose and drink LaCroix all day. twiddle knobs.
Yeah. You need, that's your Twitch channel, man.
Yeah. Well, if I could do it in some sexy lingerie, I might be making some money finally off my music.
That's a hell of a combination. You got synthesizers, you got ontology, you got lingerie, you got LaCroix, you got boogers.
It's an OnlyFans, man. That's an epic OnlyFans.
Or maybe just a lost episode of Tim and Eric.
So where is this record at? Where can we get this
at? It's Bandcamp. Just online. Yeah, it's on Bandcamp and Spotify and iTunes. And I use DistroKid for my distribution.
Link will be in the show notes like usual, so everybody can go check it out, stream it, buy it.
Yeah, one of these days I'll press a record, but not today.
I think this kind of stuff would sound really good on vinyl.
Oh, yeah, man.
Definitely add a little more warmth to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we get out of this pandemic, if I do a dinner party, will you come and play this record?
Play it live or play it on a CD player, because I don't think I can. I barely remember recording this, much less, you know, how to do it again.
You could just bring a dead board. No one would ever even know.
As long as I got a funny costume on, that's all anybody's paying attention to anyways, right?
It's a giant, like, rodent head.
Yeah, with LED lights in the eyes. And,
and nobody cares. I'm totally.
I'm murdered rodent.
So is the lingerie a part of the dinner party or not so much?
That part of the live show?
We can make it happen. I think it'll sell.
Thank you.
the song titles are great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, this one actually I recorded about 8 years ago, I want to say. Seven years ago already. And I just recreated it with the JX.
Yeah.
It's updated in a better version, I feel like, so this is kind of me covering myself. And also kind of the concept behind the progression of this song, if you map it out or whatever, as you know, with sheet music, it's called Moth Flies into Flame. Mm-hmm. The progression of it, I guess, would look like symmetrical. So like it peaks in the middle and then moves out like the wings of a something, a moth or whatever.
Wow.
So it's, yeah, that was sort of the idea behind the sequence, because the chord changes might seem like sort of arbitrary, but I internalized them from listening to them so much, and yeah, like a mirror image of itself or a symmetry.
That's great, man. I'll have to pay more attention next time I listen to it. I mean, the chord changes, I thought were, I love the chord changes.
Thank you.
Making the drum sounds on the JX was a really cool decision too. Like they just fit right in, and they're at home, you know, in a way that a different drum machine might not kind of sit that way.
Well, I think a lot of it's to do with like the same, it's all coming out of the same hole. You know, for lack of a better way of saying it, it's such a pure sound source by itself. They're all the same chips, the same voice chips, the same filter, the same preamp, and all that. And you know, it just sounds cohesive in a way that a lot of my stuff I don't think comes close to. I got kind of inspired by hearing about how Giorgio Moroder made I Feel Love, I think entirely with a Mini Moog Model D, like all the drum sounds on that, because it's got a noise source in its oscillator, and so all the bass drum, you know, the hats, the snare, all that stuff was just a Mini Moog. Now I thought, I can do that with a six voice polyphonic synthesizer. It's got a noise source on one of the DCOs, so why not?
That's all you need.
I love it. I could do that shit.
Yeah. Anybody could. You just have to apply yourself.
I feel kind of dumb for saying it, but I didn't think about it that way, the way that you put it, Howie, which was kind of how making everything from the same source, and it makes sense. It's not like I don't get it. It's just maybe I just didn't pay attention to that, and it's kind of making me feel like I want to take like the grandmother and make some.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then you wonder, like, you know, like I'll make a kick drum or whatever, sample it. Do I sequence that, or do I do what you did, which is just play it live?
The nice thing too is it also has a trigger input. So I did, like with the hats, like the really busy stuff, I didn't play that. I just let it run, and it has its own internal clock. But yeah, like all the hats, or all the snare, all the kick, that was all just playing it. So I tried to be lazy, but sometimes keep it within concept, I gotta put some effort in.
It's something that it's always been intriguing to me, and I just haven't. I just need to get the wherewithal to do it, which is take one instrument synthesizer and try and make an album with it, just to do it.
Or just a track, you know. You can start with a track. I mean, I think
that's true.
I think it's a good exercise, regardless of what your final product intention is with it. So I've definitely got a lot out of it. I've learned the boards inside and out at this point, so that, which was sort of the intention of the thing.
And now it's gone.
Right, so tell us, I mean, you start with the Roland Boutique module.
Mm-hmm.
You like that, you go after the real thing, you get it, you refurbish it, you make a record with it, and now, as of January 26th, so far as we know, to the best of our knowledge, it's available at Richards Music in Lawrence, Kansas. As far as we know, you can go down tonight or tomorrow and buy the JX3P that you used to make this record.
I know, it's a prestige buy at this point.
They're going to jack the price up now.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'm just a dirty capitalist, aren't I?
But why?
Well, because I bought Junkie XL's Oberheim Matrix 1000, and I can't justify spending that much money without selling something. And at this point, like the thing to go was my Roland boards. I had a Juno GI and the JX3P, and I've still got the MKS30, same thing as a JX3P in my mind, just better voice chips. I mean, I don't need it. So, but I do need a Matrix 1000. I mean, I need every Oberheim if I can. So,
fair enough.
Go buy it.
Everybody go buy it.
But also, I mean, I feel like I accomplished what I needed to accomplish with 1984. I've already got 1986 done, and I did that with the Korg DW8000 and the DDD1 and the MS10. And nice. Maybe whenever that's out, I'll sell those too. I don't know. I'll probably keep the MS10 because that's an amazing monophonic synth, and I love the drum machine. It is just pure 80s. But I guess I'm getting a little off topic here.
No?
Any other questions about that JX?
it sounds great, man. It's a cool record. I'm putting it on a lot at night when I'm reading or, you know, doom scrolling or a little bit less doom the last week or two, so that's all right.
Well, I think we're returning to some sense of normalcy, but, you know, from... We were inside a real abyss for a while, so.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with all less relative. Doom. I'm not sure about normalcy, but less doom is good. I appreciate less doom. Mm-hmm.
Less incompetent doom, too. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, at least look good doing it.
I know. Like, fool me. Trick me.
So, Daniel, remind everybody, where can people find you online? I mean, lovecraft.bandcamp.
Yeah, luvcraf.bandcamp.com. Love undulates violently. Consciousness rises above fear. We got Hypermortal on Instagram. I post synth stuff. Hypermortal's my band that I have with my roommates here, and that's where I put up most of my synth porn. Or any announcements of music that I'm doing. I'm not too good with Twitter or Facebook anymore, so that's kind of, you know, Instagram's a visual medium, and I can put up little audio clips. But, yeah, find me on Bandcamp. In about 2 weeks, I'm going to have that 1986 record done. It's going to be a series. So, what's that?
What's your Instagram handle?
Hypermortal.
We'll link to it.
Yeah, I'll link to that and, you know, drive up some hits. Maybe I'll start an OnlyFans page for naked synthesizer playing. But yeah,
You listed off a whole bunch of stuff earlier, man. I was like, that's an OnlyFans account. That's an ultimate OnlyFans account.
I think geared to a certain demographic, it would make some money, but...
It's all about finding your audience these days, right? Serving your niche.
Exactly. Or just sitting in your basement and making tunes, You know, that's probably more my speed. But
word. Well, thanks, Daniel. This is a great record. We appreciate you coming on.
And thank you
everybody,
so much for having
everybody
me.
Check out Lovecraft's Ontological Fallacies 1984 featuring the Roland JX3P.
You got it, man. Thanks for having me again, dude.
Thanks for being here, man. Yeah. It's fun.
It's been great talking to you dudes.
For sure.
Later, everybody.